It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay's back along with Andy Iannocco and Renee Ritchie. We'll talk about the latest rumors. In fact, apparently somebody's put out the roadmap for Apple's product releases in 2013. And we'll look ahead to Apple's big quarterly earnings report for tomorrow. It's all ahead on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 334, recorded January 22nd, 2013. Kobe Beef Bandwidth. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by Lantronics, maker of the X-Print server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. It's time for this, whatever the hell the name of this show is, Mac Break Weekly, This Week in Mac. Why do I wanted to call it that? I don't know why.
I don't know why.
It's Mac. Oh, I know why, because the old timer's here. The man who named Mac Break Weekly, Mr. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. Hi, Alex.
How's it going?
You are so rarely in town now.
I am, but I'm back.
And we're grateful for you.
Maybe even the next couple of weeks.
Some say that perhaps, you know, we named Mac. When was the first Mac Break? It was in 2006?
In 2006. That's January.
So back then, there was no iPhone. There was no iOS. It was Mac.
It really was.
Break Weekly. Now it really should be, I don't know, iOS Weekly. iOS, I don't know.
Because Mac Break is easier. We've talked about changing the name for a couple of years.
You can't change the name.
But the problem is that we can't think of something that would be better.
You can't change the name.
Right.
Also with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com up in Montreal. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
He was up late re-recording his show last night. Again and again.
It's this Apple stuff, Leo. I'm doomed, but I'm selling more than ever, and I don't know how to reconcile those two facts.
Doomed! Yeah, well, let's talk about Apple being doomed. Also, Andy Iannocco's here. It was so nice to have you on Twit on Sunday. Everybody should listen. You're fabulous.
Thank you very much. You're quite fabulous yourself, Leo.
And for those watching on video, Andy sounds great, but for those watching on video, that beautiful Minecraft edition of Andy Iannocco. Andy Iannocco, the Lego edition. This is the last time you will see it.
Oh, really?
Well, or at least if we see this next week, then we can definitely start blaming Skype and Verizon again. Because tomorrow my uplink goes from about 3 to 4 megabits to 25.
So, whoa! What'd you get? FiOS?
FiOS Superman level bandwidth, and there is actually even one level higher than that. If I decide to really be arrogant about bandwidth,
I don't think Skype uses more than 20 megabits up per second.
Yeah,
it seems like that would be more than it would need.
The thing is, I got the best that was available when I first set up my servers a few years ago, so it was certainly long past time for me to revisit that anyway. But at this point, it's like, okay, if I still have a problem next week, it's definitely Skype. It's definitely something specific to my service.
Yeah,
or just that I count amongst God's unbeloved.
Although, you know, Steve Gibson has a lot of bandwidth because he has like a direct connection, a spigot, if you will, to the backbone. But because he has all this stuff going on, he often has problems because he's conditioning it and massaging it.
Yeah.
It's like the Kobe beef of bandwidth. It's like
he battery farms his bandwidth, force feeds it more grain than it could possibly consume, and then kills it while it's young.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's actually capable of a very good connection. I mean, you see, like, when I'm at those events and I hook Jack straight
in. You probably know more about this than anything else. You're streaming all the time from all sorts of crazy places.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of two-way communication. And I mean, the big thing is making sure that there is nothing between you and the internet.
Right. So that's the key, and that's what's the problem with Steve.
No firewall. No, yeah. You know, so, like, when we, you know, we'll let – we'll go into businesses all the time and say, we need you to punch a hole. You know, we need you to build a VLAN that punches a hole through your firewall just for this one port.
Right.
Plug this in and this doesn't touch anything else until it hits the internet. Or you put in a box that lets you, basically prioritize what we call prioritize the packets and decide, you know, from this port, when someone plugs into here, they get all the bandwidth and everything else has to share whatever's left, you know, and those are some of the stuff that it's kind of my day to day.
That must be part of the fun of being Alex Lindsay, like showing up and then someone says, "Oh, don't worry, the hotel promised us they have Wi-Fi everywhere."
How often have I heard that?
Yeah. So just as an example for CES, we almost bullied the Las Vegas hotel LVH.
They don't call them the.
There was like
anymore.
2 days of bullying to talk to them to make sure that we actually got the bandwidth that we asked, and then we still didn't trust them, so we microwaved another 10 megs to the window, from another building in Las Vegas, and so. So anyway, that was the. But that's.
Yeah. Did you microwave it?
We microwaved it. Look,
wow.
Put a little receiver at the window.
Because I remember you told me what you had, like a.
I had one connection.
Megabits or something?
No. We had 10 up and down to the window, and then we had.
To the window. 10 to the window.
Yeah, 10 to the window.
And, this looks like something out of like Ocean's 14, where like Don Cheadle like rents, like opens a McDonald's like across the street just so they could aim a beam.
Well, I got to tell you, I'd like to say that's been the hardest connection we've had. It's just not. Amazing. So that's actually a pretty straightforward.
Amazing.
We work with a company called Straight Up Technologies. They do most of that for us. They're kind of our
that's
our
a black
guys.
Art. Anybody who's an expert on bandwidth is like RF, radio frequency. It's the same thing. I mean, anybody's an expert in these things, because it's not deterministic, or it probably is, but they're so chaotic. There's so many variables. You can't see the causality of stuff.
Right.
You just have to kind of sense it. There's a lot of, might as well have a dowser with a,
well,
with
and,
a hickory
and
stick.
You just have to know that there are so many
I sense
things
bandwidth.
Wrong.
Here it is.
Yeah. Well, and we're just.
Yeah, hurt them underload, bank cracky. Big here. I'm going to shoot them son of a bee. They're going to jump my bandwidth claim.
Well, and all of us are walking around, like, all of us are constantly, every city we go into, every place we go, we're constantly checking bandwidth. Like, what is the bandwidth like here? What's the LTE? Like, and it comes up in the weirdest places. Like, I was in Tahoe over the weekend, and the apartment that we got there, it's like 20 down and 10 up. I was like, I could do it.
Is
I
it
could
Verizon?
Do a podcast from here.
Verizon LTE?
No, that was the. Oh, the Verizon LTE was like eight up and down. But
you mean this was
the Wi-Fi.
That's
at the
wild.
Hyatt or whatever.
Yeah,
and it was.
But that's because nobody was there yet or something. Or
everybody
I
was
guess,
skiing.
Yeah,
it was, but we were downloading movies and it was. Uh-huh. But the. But anyway, but it's just interesting. So we're constantly obsessed. That's the one thing that we're obsessed with constantly, because it is the hardest thing to sort out.
Obsessed with bandwidth.
And it's all about pace. Have you heard of pace?
What's that?
Primary.
New York City.
You have your primary, your
that's
alternate. Base.
That's taco sauce. That sauce is made in New York City.
It's Taco Tuesday. It's on my mind. I'm sorry.
Does
PACE stand for?
Does anyone in the chat know what PACE is?
Oh, I bet somebody does.
Primary, alternate, your primary, alternate, contingency.
I bet if I look on the internet.
Emergency.
It's primary, the Professional Association for Childhood Education.
Primary, alternate, contingency, emergency. So you have four Ooh. Ways that's going to get done every single time. And almost every event we have has.
I like that.
Have that.
Primary, alternate.
Contingency.
Contingency would be like the third one down.
Emergency.
And emergency would be like, ooh.
If it, you know, and so for instance, emergency on our end is typically a LTE modem hooked to our laptop.
Yeah.
like we don't want to use it, but we always show up with one. You know, I usually have Verizon and AT&T modems that I have, right. UPS.
Alternate.
Here at Twit, we use PAW.
Yeah. We barely puh.
Barely
mostly
puh.
Our bandwidth's P, pretty much. And then maybe a little contingency.
Yes.
Emergency is they go over to my house.
Yeah, and
that's
have,
the emergency.
And we
do the
least,
whole show from my living room.
We have some cell phones,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
What is our pace? We should think of our pace.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But the reason we're stalling is because Apple's quarterly earnings call is tomorrow.
So we're going to keep on talking like this until tomorrow?
If we can get to tomorrow, there'll be some news.
Yeah.
let's say now I was going to interrupt earlier on because we were talking about names for the show. And of course I've got my Mac Mini, like with just a dedicated Twitter feed next to me right here. And there's already a couple of suggestions. I hope it's not another Mac Bleep Weekly with a rude word on it about how we say nasty things about Apple and Mac every week. So maybe
we don't say nasty things.
We say critical things because sometimes
because it's not a fan show. If you want a fan show, there are plenty of Mac Apple fan shows. This is a news show.
And also, we're not your performing monkeys, sir. We're not here to validate your decisions in life.
We will not dance for you.
Yes, but perhaps we can start off by saying that is there any announcement that could happen tomorrow that would change the fact that Apple is doing extremely well and is probably going to be doing extremely well for the next 2 or 3 years? Is there anything that's gonna make us think that, ooh, I think I should start looking at Windows 8 for real now?
No, I can guarantee you not on that.
No, there is.
But of course, what everybody's wondering, and obviously the stock market has weighed in. We talked about this on Sunday with a $200 price drop, which is significant over the last few months. What everybody's wondering is Apple kind of out of runway? And are they now going to be facing a normal market environment where there's a lot of real competition instead of just owning? I mean, they've been so dominant, and they've really owned everything. It's not a question of, is Apple going to go out of business tomorrow? It's not a question. But it might be a question of, is Apple going to look more like the post-Steve Jobs era the first time than it does now?
And the only advantage they have now is they're post-Steve Jobs, except that they have $120 billion. So, I mean, the question is that are they just going to burn that out? I mean, Microsoft had a huge, still has a huge amount. I mean, Microsoft can run for the next century just not doing anything.
Look,
the question is, does Apple stay relevant in the way that they're leading the industry?
Let me say in a way that Apple fans will not get mad. Look at Microsoft. Here's a company that has really struggled. Their stock price is flat at like nothing.
Right.
And it has not been able to break out, but it's not out of business. It's not going away. It's still the dominant operating system by far. So you can coast for a long time, but that's not what we're talking about. But what we really are saying is Apple fanatics, as people who really care about Apple, wither Apple. And well, I think to answer your question, Andy, and then I'll let you talk. Yep. To answer your question, part of the problem with this tomorrow's results is they don't reflect the whole holiday season, right? What do they reflect through October, November, December?
I think they do.
So
I believe it's the holiday quarter.
It's the holiday quarter.
Shorter than it was last year, but it's still the holiday quarter.
But it won't. But I mean, they came out with the iPhone 5 late in that. Within that quarter, right? Or just around that quarter.
We did get Verizon's results today, though, and they sold 9.8 million smartphones in their Q4, and 6.2 million of them were iPhones. So 3 out of every 5 phones they sold were smartphones they sold were iPhones. And this is when Apple is doomed. So I'm guessing if Apple wasn't doomed, it would have been 6 out of 5.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you sure it says almost, according to the Mashable article, almost half of its activations were iPhone
63%.
5. Oh, I see. Yeah.
63%.
Okay,
and that's the rest were mostly Android phones, a small mix of Windows phones and maybe a BlackBerry.
So that's good. That's an early indicator.
I think there's three areas that we typically look at Apple in. One is market share, which they've never done well at. They were never the market share leader with the Mac. When they first introduced the iPhone, Nokia and BlackBerry were massive, and Steve Jobs said we'd be happy with a few percentage points. And now Android is massive. Profit share, Apple has never had a problem with. They're always hugely under the Jobs 2 era, they've always been hugely profitable. But mind share is something that they grabbed a lot of when the iPhone launched, and that is something that seems more vulnerable now. It's the not necessarily the financials, but the coolness factor and the sort of aura that Apple has that attracted a lot of people over the last few years now is maybe fragmenting between more players.
So I don't think anybody here would say Apple is doomed. The only question is Apple on the upswing, the downswing, or hovering?
Well, and I think that one of the things that we saw, I mean, and some people had talked about it, I'm sure we talked about it here too, but a lot of the end of the year stock drop, I think a lot of people are saying, oh, Apple's stock is going down. And a lot of that had as much to do with tax policy in the United States as it did with anything that people thought about Apple. A lot of people had huge positions in Apple, and they're afraid of where the taxes are going in the United States.
Yeah.
And so what they wanted to do is lock some of that profit in before they had to pay more taxes on it this year than they would have last year.
Profit taking, and so
there's a lot of profit taking there, and I think that they probably see that Apple, if anything, is going to slow down a little bit as far as because they were astronomical for a while, and even when you look at the stock rise over the last year, I believe even with Apple quote unquote losing hundreds of points or whatever,
where it was at the beginning of the year.
Is it?
Yeah,
yeah. So that's this year.
Yeah,
the beginning of this year.
I'm
saying, if you look over the last 12 months, I believe it's up by still 20 or 30% at least.
I wonder. Let me get this.
Google financing,
find out when the last time Apple was at 500.
Right,
that would be of interest.
So I think that while it dropped, I think that there is there was a fairly good growth over the. There was a fairly good growth over the last year. Year to year. I mean, healthy for a company that is one of the largest in the world from a market cap perspective. It's a very, very aggressive growth rate.
On this day in 2012, mm-hmm. they were at 427.
Right. So you're looking at a 20%, a little less than 20% growth.
Right.
So that's not still for a company that is the largest, one of the largest companies. That's an extremely. Most of these companies, measure their growth in single digits.
But it's not just the stock price, although it's partly, and maybe the stock price is influenced by the stories that iPhone 5 orders are down from the suppliers, that the Sharp has stopped making iPad screens. I mean, we're hearing stories out of China that Apple's ordering less product. So that's
right.
That's also where this comes from.
And some of that, the question really around that is are there adjustments being made? For instance,
maybe they predicted huge sales and they're only going to have giant sales.
Exactly. Well, and also the shift from the full sized iPad to the iPad Mini. I mean, I barely use my full size iPad anymore. So I think that there's a lot of people that have made that choice, and I think that was, and I'm sure that Apple knew that was going to be successful. The question is whether they knew it was going to be as successful as it has been. So I think that that'll be really interesting to see what numbers they give us related to iPad Mini sales over this last quarter. That's something I'm going to be really fascinated to see,
to me is the iPad of choice, right?
Yeah.
We agree.
Yeah. I mean, obviously all of us agree that it would be great to have a Retina.
Here's the big question though. If the iPad Mini goes Retina, or if the big iPad gets a casing as thin and small and light as the iPad Mini, then it's blurrier again, because you have a 9.7-inch screen that's very small, very tiny, very portable, and a 7.9-inch screen that's suddenly very good. And then those products become more competitive, I think.
I don't think it becomes blurry at all. I think that people are really very, very clear on the difference between a device like this, which is sort of a notebook replacement, and a device like this, which is very much like a media device. The fact that so many people, again, Alex, you must, I think that if I were to even play back all my video and audio recorded secretly logs of all conversations I ever have with all my friends and family members, I think it would be almost 100% the people who are regular 9.7-inch iPad users who then got an iPad Mini who almost never use the full-size version anymore. So I really do think that this was just any smaller size tablet, anything that you can hold in one hand without being an NBA player, anything that you can conceivably stick in some pocket of some piece of clothing that you actually have that's not designed specifically for shoplifting purposes, I think that's a fundamentally different sort of thing. And I think that this is going to – what I'm really looking forward to finding out tomorrow is if there's an indication of – is the iPad Mini reaching out to people who were really, really on that fence before about the iPad, or had dismissed the iPad before? Is it bringing new people into the fold, people that had rejected the larger one, but this was the Mini was exactly the one that they wanted? So I think that we're going to get a lot of really interesting information about what the so-called normal size tablet is. I think that we might find out that a 10-inch tablet is actually the big tablet. It's not the normal size tablet, and it's the smaller one that people are actually looking for.
Yeah, I find it fascinating that I have a lot of different tablets that I'm playing with, but when my 3-year-old daughter insists on the mini. I try to hand
well,
her a full size one.
Got little baby
hands. she's like, I want your tablet. You know, she keeps.
I want the good one.
Yeah,
if she says I want the good one, then that's different.
So so when you see them at that age, they're making a quality decision about how they're, you know, what
have
they're
I doing. Said this on this show? I've said it on every other show. I think Apple's next product. I'm going to go out on a limb here. In March will be a iPad mini, a mini iPhone, an iPad mini with iPhone built in. Did I say that yet?
You said it on
Twitter
this week in tech. Mm-hmm. I don't think you said it on this show. I'm not sure that I agree. I mean, if you're talking about this only with phone features,
yes.
Well, I'm not really sure.
Not for everybody. You can still have your crappy little iPhone 5. Yeah,
I want it too. But Apple doesn't work that way.
Won't do it.
I'm a real big fan of. I mean, no secret before. I mean, I'm a big fan of like the larger screen phones. I love this 4.8 inch screen. The Note 2. I have one on loan that is tempting me to actually acquire one for real, because I do think that Apple's missing the boat by creating phones that still have small screens on them. However, the idea of making this a discrete phone product is going to be, I think it would be a really bold move for Apple to do. It would say that they're no longer willing to only produce products that they absolutely 100% have faith in. They're now willing to say, we don't know whether people want a small phone, a large tablet, a small tablet, or a small phone tablet. So we're just going to make as many things as we can and let people pick. I do think, just to cap it off, mm-hmm. I do think that it's inevitable that Apple's going to move away from the form factor they have for the iPhone 5. I do think they're going to have to move towards something that's closer to this, even if it's not like a huge Note 2 sort of form factor. I do think they're going to make this bigger, the iPhone bigger for real, instead of just making it longer.
I think that from a phone perspective, I think that, and I wrote a lot of about this on a G+ post that I put up, but I think that what's missing for Apple right now when it comes to the phone is unifying the FaceTime effect of being able to call someone. Like, I don't want to use FaceTime, but I do want to call them. And I just want to use Wi-Fi, or I just want to use my 3G or 4G. The thing is, I want to bypass all the minutes. I just want it to be a data call. And I want to have
Well, you
can
do that
call.
Right now with a mini. I mean, you don't need to anything special.
You can, but it's not just
By
like
the way,
a,
the, here's the thing. The cell carriers are moving in that direction, too. That's what LTE is all about. LTE currently doesn't carry voice. But that's the plan, and then they're just a data network.
But what I don't understand right now, like, I guess for the issue right now is that it's not as easy as with on like if I dial somebody if I dial someone else with an iPhone or an iPad, or if I want to call a computer, a Mac or whatever, I want to have that be just something that is super simple, and I don't want it to bring up a video screen. You know, I just want to dial the number and get them wherever they route it to, you know, in their .Mac account or whatever, or all of them or whatever it is. But I want to be able to, the idea of calling a computer, an iPad or a phone to me should be completely seamless. I want to contact that person. But right now it feels like it's all leaning towards video. You know, so it's all like, you know, the FaceTime is the easy, I want to call that person, boom. The thing right now is that I just feel like it's this onerous process, whereas I just dial their number and it just calls them via Wi-Fi. It's just a data call all the time. And the reason that that's important to me, of course, is that I spend a lot of time overseas. And so if I have a data connection that I'm paying for, I don't want to have to pay for $4 a minute, you know, to make that go away. Yeah.
Also, I think that it's people want more flexibility. They don't really think about a telephone number for a person. They think of that person.
Right. Exactly.
And I really wish that iMessage worked the way that Apple kind of promised it would last year. Because let's say that you, God forbid, that you want to use iMessage on your iPhone sometimes, but on iDevices other times, and you don't necessarily want you want a certain amount of clarity. You want to simply say, please direct all my iMessage traffic for whatever reason to this device and not all the rest of them. It becomes such a hoary mess because I recently changed my data plan so that I can move my SIM from one device to another. So this is something that you would be not something that most people are dealing with. But if you move, let's say you switch away from the iPhone to something else. Let's say you decided that, hey, I really do like the Galaxy Note 2. Let's say you really do like something else. now iMessage gets confused as to when it should contact you via a text message. When someone should be sending something to you as a text message, when it should be sending to you as an iMessage. It's like, yikes, it should really figure that out a lot easier. I should be able to go to a universal setting and say, hi, yes, anytime someone's trying to contact me via the iMessage service, if I'm logged in and active onto this device, route it to this device, otherwise send it as a text message.
And, you know, this, by the way, is why not the stock price, not the whether or not they're ordering fewer iPads or iPhones, but this is to why me, I'm a little worried about Apple. I used to have that feeling that Apple will solve this. They're mm-hmm. going to do something great. I have no longer have any confidence at all that Apple right. will be able to solve this problem and make something that we want to use. I just have lost confidence in Apple. Not that anybody else out there is any better. I've in some ways lost confidence in the tech industry as a whole.
I think the issue
should come up with innovative, interesting solutions.
It used to be that Apple really did. You just was, oh, I never, you know, they thought about it better than we would.
Right.
you know,
yes, I used to have this huge respect.
They were ahead of us.
Apple will solve it. The great Steve will figure it out. Right. And you don't, you just, at least I, and maybe it's just me, mm-hmm. don't have that feeling anymore.
I think there's a rosy glow effect when we look back over time. I mean, I remember things. Like people complain about skeuomorphism now, and I remember brushed metal from
brushed Mac. Metal. That was they the were, first skeuomorphism. Yeah,
yeah. But there were things. It never worked right. We had such an enormous. We had a great feeling towards it. We had a lot of confidence, and it was psychology, and it was perception. And I think that's the big difference between then and now is that we've decided for some reason it's like, you know, after Buster Douglas knocks out Mike Tyson, suddenly everyone who's afraid of him thinks, oh, maybe I can knock him out too. It's a change in universal perception.
Yes.
And things like Andy was mentioning, Palm had Synergy for a while where you take all your messaging, put it into little silos, but manifest it all in one unified interface. And there's all these great software ideas, but Apple was stuck scraping Google off their phone and setting up Passbook and outsourcing their social networks last year. And now this year they've got to work on that for iOS 7.
Passbook's a great example of a solution that doesn't do anything that it promises.
It's stuck with the third parties that feed
it. Works great.
The web apps that Passbook itself is fantastic. I drive up to Starbucks, they scan me, and I'm gone. But the apps that you use to put stuff into and in some cases get out of Passbook are these horrible little web apps with tiny buttons that want all your PayPal and login information in tiny little fields. And the stuff outside of Apple's control isn't as good as the stuff in their control yet.
Yeah. I think Renee was spot on. I think I would expand that to call it like the Simpsons effect, where no season of the Simpsons is as good right. as the first three seasons when right. you start listening to it, because you forget that out of 20 episodes or 22 episodes a season, there was the monorail episode that would become legendary. There'd right. be eight that you'd really like. There'd be five or six that you'd be like, okay, that was an off week, and then three where you're just, oh dear, why did I bother even finishing watching this? I think that Apple's the same way. I mean, if you go, but you don't have to go back too far to find years in which, you know, the iSync didn't really work properly. Yes. iTunes has never been. It's been a while since iTunes has been as good an app as a lot of us would want it to be. So I mean, I think that I think it's like, you know, we're still coming off the high of the iPhone, the high of the iPad, and we expect that now every single thing right. they do has to be the iPhone, has to be the iPad. That said, I think it's very, very good that the Apple community of users is recognizing that there is no magic wiffle dust that makes them into this genius Jesus level organization. They are a tech company that has a very, very clear idea of what they think technology should be. Sometimes that idea is in sync with what you want and need. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes they do it successfully. Sometimes they don't. But what keeps my faith in Apple is that I know that they always believe in the things that they do, and they always try very, very, very hard to give consumers the best experience possible.
Product over profit, I think.
And we're also in an era now where the things that are important are not the things that Apple has historically done well. Things like right. cloud services. Yeah. And yeah. they're facing big challenges that they didn't have to face. Or like Andy mentioned, iSync or Back to My Mac years ago. And it's going to be a huge struggle yes. to get those right.
We're
going to take a break. Come back with more. Renee Ritchie from iMore is here. His Apple is Doomed episode of the iMore podcast went out at midnight last night. Poor guy.
Doomed again.
Wonderful surprise appearance from Alex Lindsay of Pixel Core. Great to have you here.
It's good to be.
The original Mac Daddy of Mac Break Weekly. And, of course, Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Pixelated for the last time, ladies and gentlemen. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, that great bookstore of audiobooks. How many well over 100,000. I haven't counted recently. That it's probably, you know, I could do a search for all books. I think that's what we did last time to figure out. They're recorded in audio format that allows you to play them on almost anything. There's an Audible app, which is fantastic, that lets you play the audiobooks on the iPhone, the Android phone, and Windows phone. Yes?
Can I say something about that?
Yes, please.
I for a long time, the first Audible app that came out wasn't super featured.
It's terrible.
So I got into the habit. It's horrible.
It's horrible.
I was trying to be nice.
Let's
be
honest.
It was unusable.
Let's be honest.
So when they first came out, it was just completely. And so I just stuck with iTunes. And so I would just order all my Audible books through iTunes. And that turned out to be a big mistake. So if you're getting into Audible now, get the app. Buy it through Audible. Don't buy through iTunes. And the reason is now it's barely even referred to in iTunes, in your music section. In iTunes, it's hard to find. And when you change and you don't have the connection correct, everything else, you lose all your books. When you do it through audible.com and you do it with their app, it means that it stays in the cloud.
I love their app.
You can download it again. Yeah. It's like Kindle. It's like everything's up there no matter when you bought it.
And that's nice, too. All the books you've ever bought on Audible are always available in your life.
Yeah, I can't even find where I spent hundreds of dollars in iTunes on Audible books that now I can't. You know, I'm having trouble getting, and so the audible.com and the new application that they have out on at least on the iPhone is awesome, and I'm gonna download it on my Android.
They have a Windows 8 app, a Metro app. That's
those guys
nice.
Are crazy.
It's really
and
nice.
And they have the speed up, so you can do like 1.5,
yep,
which is
yep,
very important.
Yep.
And it's great.
124,000 books. I just did the count, or titles, I guess, should say, at audible.com. It goes up all the time. It is an amazing resource. If you spend time in the car driving, if you, I listen at the gym, on the Stairmaster. It's so boring that Audible is a lifesaver. It's
cleaning
house.
That's my big one.
I play it through the entire house really loud. I can hear it in every room, even over the vacuum cleaner. I'm sure my neighbors are really enjoying book two of the King Killer Chronicles. I have plenty of recommendations, as anybody who's an Audible fan does, but I always like to hear what Andy's listening to, because he's introduced me to more titles. I just love his eclectic. You're not reading Francona, the Red Sox years, are you? Terry Francona's biography there?
Sports biographies, they're such a crapshoot for me, because you never know. Like, it's great when they get like a lifelong friend of the athlete who knows him very, very well and knows what stories to pull out of him are good. It's another one when like you feel as though there's a 3-hour conference call in which half of the stories are the publicist saying, okay, you can't remember,
you can't say that
story.
You can't say that.
Wade Boggs drinking 28 beers on like one 10-hour flight back from a road. You can't write about that. You can't write.
Now, I will give you one that I'm sure you've read that is a classic, more than 20 years old now, Jim Boughton's Ball 4, and that is on Audible.
Yeah, I read that. Perfect. That was the story of the Seattle area pitcher. It was like one of the first like behind the scenes tell all books.
It blew the lid off of Major League Baseball.
It wasn't really a tell all book. It was more like somebody who's had amazing experiences in professional sports, but is also an exceptional storyteller. So it's not as though you're just talking about he's grinding old axes or selling off whatever weird stories he has to pay off whatever boat that he wished he hadn't bought before he blew out his knee or whatever. So yeah, that was a fantastic book. I didn't know it was on Audible.
It is, and Jim Boughton reads it, which is going to be great. It came out in 1975, and it's often credited with creating free agency. The book was used as testimony during the arbitration hearings for free agency. So if you're kind of hankering for baseball, there's a great choice. I have just I finished No Easy Day. If you saw Zero Dark 30. Mm-hmm. The story is to a great extent based on this account by one of the SEAL Team 6 members.
Book.
It's also about being a SEAL Team member, which is great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Can't put it down.
If you really into that, also the SEAL Team 6, the book SEAL Team 6 is really good.
Yeah, yeah. Did I say SEAL Team 7? No, mm-hmm. I said 6, I hope. Mm-hmm. there's no 1 through 5. They're just SEAL Team 6. Did you know that?
There's a lot. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, in fact, they don't even call themselves that. In the book, he calls himself something else. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Moneyball, there's a great one. Michael Lewis's amazing book about the Oakland A's. They made a movie out of it. And how Billy Beane at the Oakland A's turned that team around. What are you reading, Andy?
Actually, what I just started into was a book that was just was re-released in audio just a couple weeks ago, or at least rebranded, Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho.
Oh, I want to read that.
Yeah, it's because of the movie with the Anthony Hopkins. I'm not sure, I wasn't aware there was an audio before now. It's one of the classic books of here is, I love these biography type books that don't try to cover somebody from the birth to their moment of their death, and that is tries to find an overarching theme with and psychoanalyzing every scene in their life. I think the best biographies are the ones that say, well, here is one project they did. Here is one 4-year, 5-year span, and we're going to get so deep into this that we feel as though you're going to really know about this person by the time you get to the end of this project. So this is about nothing but Alfred Hitchcock making Psycho. Every decision that went into it, every influence he had, every argument he had with the studio, every bit of abusive and psycho controlling behavior that he exerted to get exactly what he wanted from Leigh and all the other characters. I'm only about a couple of chapters into it right now, but it's already one of those. You know, I was going to watch this 2-hour TV marathon tonight. I think instead I will simply sit in my chair and listen to more audio of this because I want to know what happens right before the shower scene. I want to know how this argument actually pays out.
There's lots of stories. And, you know, they just made a movie about Tippi Hedren and the birds.
No. Well, two came out at the same time. One was the girl. About the birds, right. And the other one was starring Anthony Hopkins. Can't remember her name. If this were Super Password, all I would have to say is older English actress, still hot.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, by the way,
there's so many
good books. Here's I'm going to be listening to this. You know, I'm going to the Super Bowl because Lisa's a big fan of the Niners and. I guess the Niners won a game or something, and we're going to New Orleans. So I've got my next book is on Audible is A Woman's Guide to Football, How to Talk His Language, The Basics. Wait a minute, I just got to hear a little bit of this because I think that I need this.
Away. Those maneuvers to keep people away from the guy on your team who's holding the ball are called blocks.
Blocks.
The field is 100 yards long and 53 1/3 yards wide.
Okay.
As you listen, imagine that the 100 yards runs right and left in your mind's
eye. Wait a minute. I got to stop now and think about this. Right and left, 100 yards, 50 yards. Okay, I got it. 53 wide. I'm trying to memorize this now. Please.
That's a little bit like, you know, that's a little bit condescending. It's like the football field is about the same proportions as, I don't know, like a medium roasting pan or a brown pan.
Lisa's looking at me funny now.
At the main room at Borgdorf.
I did buy the Idiot's – no, the Complete Dummies Guide to Football. I did buy that, actually.
That I could use again. Yeah. I know it's the one where there's a ball and you're allowed to touch it with your hands and there's grass.
It always interrupts
Amazing Race. That's all I know about football.
You know, in Pittsburgh, they have whole classes, like support groups for women who are trying to, you know, keep up with
men?
It.
What about men? What about people like me? I'm a football widower.
What's funny is it's only people who actually move to Pittsburgh because all the women that already grew up in Pittsburgh already understand the process.
The point here is Audible has many, many choices, and you can get... Audible. It's shaped somewhat like a chafing dish on your web. And think of it as a chafing dish filled with books.
It's like talking to your mother, except that it's
53 yards wide.
Yes, exactly. And it's lots of useful tidbits.
Now, remember the time when you had company coming over, you were about to put the casserole in the oven, but some of it slopped over to the edges and time seemed to stop? That's exactly what happens when a person with the ball runs out of bounds. They stop the clock, just like in the casserole.
Okay, I won't buy the Woman's Guide to Football. But anyway, you get your first book is free. Audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the subscription plan that gives you a book a month. And by the way, with subscription plans, you also get your choice of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times daily read to you. You know, the highlights, which is a really nice thing in the car. You listen to the news, you listen to a book, you're set. And listen to a podcast, you're set. You could have an 18-hour commute. You'd be fine. So audible.com/MacBreak. Join today. First month is free. First book is free. You're canceled anytime. It's yours to keep forever. What are you laughing at? Just like a casserole.
Alex, how would Jar Jar Binks describe football?
How would Jar Jar Binks describe football?
I don't. Put him on the spot.
Nothing.
That's the problem. You can't do that voice when you're laughing.
He thinks he's going to. He's passing this time. On second hand, no, not really.
They just hit him. He should play ball now.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus like thinks that's a horrible.
Like Kingdom for a Blaster.
At least with Disney, Jar Jar will be.
Yes. His own Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah. Something like that. Next year at this time, we're going to be commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Apple Macintosh.
Isn't that crazy?
Today, or actually the 19th, in 1983, Apple unveiled two products. Not quite as huge as the Macintosh. The Lisa and the Apple IIe are 30 years old.
The Apple IIe was the first computer I actually owned.
I think a lot of people watching, that was the first computer. Yeah. Apple was famous for, but the IIe was a great computer. It was color, right?
Oh, yeah.
Don't even get me started.
My first color.
My dad, I told him I wanted an Apple IIe, and he got it, and then he got me a green monitor. So I knew that it was a color machine, a green monitor.
Dad.
But yeah, no, the Apple II Plus also had color. See, Apple II was
Plus
green.
Had color.
Yeah, and the Apple II Plus came out, and that was a big difference because the Franklin, which was the, you remember the,
it
was
a knockoff.
Yeah. So I got
the Apple II Plus when my father's office had a Lisa, and I remember the first time I sat down, Lisa. I just dragged everything to the trash can because it was so cool.
And you were never invited back.
I was never. Yeah, it was put away after that.
The Lisa, I remember standing in the window with my nose pressed to the glass looking at the Lisa. It was, at the time, $9,995.
It was insane.
Which is, in today's money, according to the article from the AP, no, Samantha Lyle writing at Personal Finance Hub, not today it would be $23,000. So, of course, the Lisa didn't do very well. Nobody's going to spend $23,000 on a personal computer.
I think it was like $2,000.
Retina Mac was expensive.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The Lisa was a 5 megahertz processor, had dual floppy disk drives, those Twiggy drives. They had a little bit of a design flaw. The opening for the floppy was right where you put your thumb when you pulled it out. Maybe somebody should have thought of that. So that proves, Apple hasn't always been perfect. Yep. But it was the first based on the Xerox Star interface, the windowed GUI with icons, pull-down menus. It was 10 months later that Microsoft did Windows, so it was the first.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Renee.
It also shows, Apple I to Apple II, Lisa to Mac. Apple often has, not a really great product before they nail it with the next thing.
Yeah. Well, that's true of every company, right? Your first edition might be, look at Windows 8. You might
Windows
have a little...
Windows 9 is going to be great.
Yeah.
but also shows something even better about Apple, that they are completely willing to torpedo one of their own successful products if they really think that this is where we need to be in the next 5 years. That remember all the stuff that was... All the complaints about the Macintosh that were absolutely spot on, that there was no software for it. It was incompatible with Apple software. It was incompatible with DOS software. That the Apple IIe... It was at least 100-pound gorilla, which can still got amazing upper body strength and teeth. So don't turn your back on a 100-pound gorilla by any means. It was just a monster hit, monster seller. The fact that they would come out with something that would in some ways challenge it for supremacy and it eventually take sales away from it, it became impossible. To improve upon the Apple IIe, partly because it did such a bad job with the Apple III, but also partly because of the Macintosh was definitely the sexy computer you wanted to have next, as opposed to a new iteration of a multi-slot text-based computer.
So remember, if you read Steve Jobs' biography by Walter Isaacson, he talks about the Lisa and really the schism that developed at Apple because Steve felt the Lisa was too expensive. He really wanted to make a less expensive,
and he was right.
And was essentially forced out by the board because he developed the Mac and really created a schism within Apple. And the board eventually forced him out and said, "John Sculley, you run this company." The Lisa was the beginning of the end for Steve Jobs because he didn't believe in it. He didn't want him to make a Lisa.
And basically the Mac cut it off, right?
Mac cut it off at the knees.
Right.
Sort of like the iPhone and the iPod, and now in hindsight, the iPod is diminishing and the iPhone is rising, and Apple Apple's one of the few companies that doesn't mistake their products for their business. And it's really tempting to think if you make A, that's the business, but there's usually something behind it. And Apple's been fairly good at understanding that they don't make Apples, or they don't make Macs, or they don't make iPods. They make these devices that let us do things, and there's new incarnations of those just as one is starting to fall down again.
Yeah. So Lisa and the Apple IIe, happy birthday this week. It's kind of amazing to think that's been 30 years, 1983.
Makes me feel old.
Me too.
Wow. Let's see. So you did ask a question, Andy, which at the very beginning of the show, which we haven't answered yet, which is what would you see in the quarterly results announced tomorrow by Apple that would indicate, and I'll restate a little bit, either on the positive or the negative, you know, will give you some indication of whether there is, it is doomed or if there's a great future.
Well, yeah, it's a good question in any way you phrase it. Mostly I was saying that I was trying to sort of underscore like the disconnection there should be between financial results and the products that they make and the services they make. Sometimes I think that the things that kind of annoy me, frustrate me, disappoint me about so much of the conversation these days is that any conversation about how good an Apple competitor is yes, but look how much Apple is growing versus this competitor's company is growing. Or, gee, you know, Apple seems to the iPhone 5 sales immediately after its launch are not as fast as sales of the iPhone 4S was the previous year. It's like, let's get down to the basic point. Is it a successful company? Yes. So successful that they can continue to do whatever they want to do? Yes. Does the fact that the stock price is going down, or the fact they might have sold fewer units this quarter than the same quarter last year, does that affect your enjoyment of your Apple device? No, it doesn't. Okay. Conversation over. Now let's talk about what different Mac-based note-taking apps we all like. You know?
Apple has apparently pulled 500 PX apps from the market. I guess the assumption is that the 500 PX, which is a Flickr-like site, a really good one, a lot of really pros sort of, yeah, use, it's apparently too easy to search for nude photos. Who knew? Apple has pulled its mobile apps from the App Store. There's this thing called the World Wide Web. And you open a Safari, you can go to pretty much anything, the most hardcore porn you want.
Stuff that's it, Leo. They're going to pull Safari.
You ought to pull Safari, Apple. Apple reviewer told the company the update couldn't be approved because it allowed users to search for nude photos. Actually, 500px had made it a little harder to do so. You had to safe search was the default. You had to go in and turn it off. I got to tell you, on Tumblr, it's almost hard not to see nude photos, whether you search or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it an issue where it allows that kind of search, or was it simply an issue where it was mislabeled inside the App Store? Because I was looking at the warnings for Grand Theft Auto Vice City, and it's in the App Store, even though it has warnings of mild to excessive violence, mild to excessive sexual content, mild to excessive drug use. Is it a labeling? Is if they resubmitted and simply made sure that there was the appropriate labels, the appropriate warnings before someone could download it, and they could just simply resubmit it, or was it just simply, sorry, we don't like the lovely gallery effect you have on your, you know, I was about to, you know, on your nudie pics. I know it's interesting. I know you say it's artful nudie pics, but there's still, you know, one of those being done with one of those. We can't have that.
The folks at 500px are furious. They say the app was in the store for 16 months.
Until they pay attention to it with these new anti-nudity measures. But, you know, if you launch 1Password, it's got a browser built in, so it has to tell you that it's an adult application that could access.
I know, that always bugs the hell out of me.
Yeah, like Andy said, it could be that they didn't tick that box for that content, or it could just be that once again we have the Will Ferrell-like character in the App Store who approves tethering apps and disapproves apps that have been there for months.
You just really got to wonder if this hurts Apple or not. I mean, does Apple gain sales by doing this? Do they somehow reassure parents, oh, well, they're blocking nudie apps, so I think we should buy Johnny an iPhone.
Well, I think that there is a... I mean,
what is the gain to Apple to do this?
I don't know why. I mean, especially if you have to deactivate it on the web. I don't have 500 picks, so I don't know. But I think that if you have to actually turn the SafeSurf off, the only question I have is whether the SafeSurf was really working. I mean, I know that as a parent...
I think you might be just labeling. It might just be... There's adult content.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, the issue is it as a, I have to be careful, like, what kind of apps. Like, one of the big problems that we had with, because my 3 and 5 year old run around with iPads all the time. And so.
Does Apple do that for Safari? No. Does Apple, before you launch Safari, say, hey, by the way, you could go to adult sites on this browser?
Oh, no.
Why? What's the double standard here? The phone inherently can go to porn. Thanks to an app Apple put on there, including searching 500px for nudes in the app. I don't understand the double standard.
I think for a certain segment of the population, I think that this is probably a plus. They're going to be more, you know, knowing that there's a controlled environment. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't quite understand this decision, but being able to have solid control over what's actually happening, you know, exactly what my kids are, you know, it's mostly what we mostly have is there's a back end to like YouTube from Angry Birds. And so what my kids do is they watch the Angry Birds videos. They watch the Angry Birds videos, then they watch YouTube. And then there's
Does my phone have to be limited because you let your kids use your phone?
No. I'm just saying that Apple
seems ridiculous.
Apple is developing a market and they're looking for a certain clientele. And that clientele, you know, part of that clientele is
4-year-olds,
schools, parents.
Yeah, but I cannot now use the 500px app even though I'm an adult.
This sounds like one of those dumb things where someone in Apple higher up on the review committee or the executive committee looks at it and goes, oh, you did what and we had to put up with what? Just put that app back and, you know, you're on suspension for no longer today.
Here's another one. This is VentureBeat writes about this, Jeffrey Grubb, in the Apple guidelines. We view apps differently than books or songs, which we do not curate. If you want to criticize a religion, write a book. If you want to describe sex, write a book or a song or create a medical app. It can get complicated, but we have decided not to allow certain kinds of content in the App Store. This is Steve Jobs' legacy. Remember, Steve was like proud of the fact that you couldn't get porn on the iPhone, even though you obviously can.
Android's a porn phone.
Yeah, he said Android's a porn phone.
Yes.
I don't know how this hippie guy, Steve Jobs, got to be such a prude. Thank God your picture's pixelated, Andy. That's all I can say.
Yeah, this 500px app is super, super hot.
Hot.
Oh, my God. Actually, I should actually check to make sure. Okay, good. There is no nudity in this.
No, and by default, and this has always been at 500px, because there are a lot of nudes, artistic, by the way, not pornographic, artistic nudes on 500px. It's a photographer's site. By default, they've always blocked those. The Safe Search is on. Now, there's a Flickr app. You could do exactly the same thing on Flickr, by the way.
Tons of Wikipedia apps.
It seems like such a...
Yeah, well,
if you search, like they said, write a book if you're doing a sex one, just do a search in the App Store for Kama Sutra.
Yeah, there's like a dozen Kama Sutra apps.
Yeah.
But that's not a medical app. That's why I was looking for like Vice City, which is a fun game, but you know, it's a violent game. It's not for kids. People are doing extremely extreme things in it. And it really doesn't speak well of Apple that if they're not willing to allow a game that has a purpose that the people who create the game feel as though there's an educational purpose to it. And that's not allowed. But if you want to shoot a hooker in the face and steal her car, perfectly fine, so long as there are points involved.
Right.
I think back to the few years ago when someone released a brilliant game that essentially was a first-person shooter that put you in Oswald's sniper's nest in Dealey Plaza.
Oh, wow.
And it got a lot of like really negative attention because people thought that, oh, well, you're teaching kids to have fun shooting the president. No, because the physics were actually quite accurate. The views from the sniper's nest were absolutely wonderful. And if there's any way that you can start to bite into the people's suspicion that of the lone gunman theory, fine. Here's a gun that has all the performance characteristics of the gun that Oswald used. Here is an accurate model of the physics. Here's an accurate model of the place. Here is the car modeled accurately on the accurate terrain going exactly as fast as the road car was going see if you can do it. And it was within one day, people were saying, you know, not only was I able to duplicate Oswald's shooting, I was able to kill other people in the car and do it faster. So it's there are ways that you can use games to educate in ways that are, by the same coin, to manipulate people in ways that you can't do with a book or piece of music. And if Apple is saying that we're not interested in publishing apps that have that kind of controversial potentially role, I think that doesn't speak well of them. I understand what they want to do there, because it's not as though they want to – their goal is we want to limit people's speech. It's that they want to limit the amount of hassle they have to go – the company has to go through in order to have a functioning app store. If they feel as though – if it means that we occasionally have to not approve an app that has that kind of religious content or political content, we would much rather take the small amount of crap we're going to get for that than the enormous amounts of crap we would get by having an app that from Reverend Phelps, for instance.
Well, but that's the point, is that once you start censoring things, it is a mire. Don't even get involved. And, we come from an era of open computing. If this had happened on a compute platform, you can't buy that app for your Mac, it would be offensive in the highest degree.
There is,
and what makes the phone so different?
There's the one thing, though, is that this is not an outside body telling Apple they can't have the app. This is Apple exercising editorial discretion, the same way like NBC won't air my basement sitcom, or the New York Times won't publish my diatribe. They're electing not to have this sold in their store, so it's a little bit different than when people often think.
No, it would be more like Sony saying you can't watch porn on our television. That's what it would be like, because they're making the hardware. They're not telling us. If they said you can use somebody else's store, that's fine.
That's not the same thing. That similarity would be okay if all the video players that were on that were built into the thing said that we will not allow you to play any unrated content or content that's rated above this level. We are not going to allow that to happen on our device.
That's what it's like.
I think
the danger is really more like what's happened to Walmart, where Walmart gets into trouble in saying that we will not carry this movie, we'll not carry this book, we'll not carry this game, because it's not family Walmart values.
But here's the difference. The big difference is that you can only buy. But the difference is you can only buy apps from Apple.
It means that Walmart gets this reputation as, no, this is not a place where you actually can buy things you want. It's a place with a corporate agenda and a political agenda, in a sense, and a society agenda. It's not an open marketplace, and that's the attitude that they're saddled with, the public opinion they're saddled with. The danger to Apple, and they're certainly free to pursue whatever agenda they want to pursue, but the danger is that people will not associate the iTunes content store with an open marketplace where you can get anything you want. And that's in a place where the Sony store and the Google Play store and the Amazon stores are more Wild West. Hope that doesn't bite them in the butt sometime.
And I think that there's a liability issue, I think, also for Apple, is once you start making the censorship decisions, it also makes you possibly liable for the decisions you don't make. Yeah. So once, if someone uses an app on the App Store to do something illegal or to do other things that are there, because you were censoring, once you start stepping into it, the real challenge you get into after that is that you could get yourself into a position where you said, well, if you're actually taking an active role here and then something happened, why didn't you take action there? So it does, as Leo said.
It's a foolish tar pit.
Apple did go on stage. Steve Jobs was on stage saying, we have two platforms. We have the App Store, which we curate, and we have web apps via Safari, which they use web.app, and they use UI WebView and stuff like that. And you can show anything you want in there, which is why Playboy made the HTML5 app that works great on the iPad, but they couldn't put that into the store. So they've clearly divided their two tracks. But again, I don't think this is – I mean, because it's nudity involved, it hits the censorship button and the editorial button hard. But I think this is just one of the dumb things that happened in the App Store, and that it gets reversed in fairly short order.
If this is the whole story. I mean, a lot of times when Apple does this, when there's complaints about it, we haven't seen all the details. So, and the thing is that Apple is definitely playing for a certain market. And the folks that are, a lot of people who have iPads and iPhones and so on and so forth, don't really care. I think that's the issue, is that they do care. They're
going to start caring, I think.
No, I don't think so. I think 80% of the population that has an iPhone won't care. And I think that's the issue. That's what Apple, they do care. They will care if their kids are you know, running around with nudity on their phone, much less than they care about whether an app that they never heard of is banned. It's not going to mean anything to them. And I think that, you know, we in the tech industry oftentimes think about, you know, that it needs to be all, you know, free and open and everything else. And I get sensitive about that. But I also, when I go back home and talk to my parents, they're just still figuring out how to put apps on their phone. I mean, you know, so the thing is that it's not my wife has like 2 pages of apps. So, and she's not going to care. What she does get mad about is every time there's swearing coming out of the iPad from YouTube. Like, so what I get all the time is, you need to make that go away. You need to make that stop. That I hear that over and over and over again. So I have to build all these little things into it to make sure my kids don't get to YouTube, because my wife complains about it. So the thing is, there are a lot of people who are buying those, and whether they're schools or parents or whatever, and Apple's definitely, you know, more interested in that market than they are interested in folks that want absolute freedom.
The one thing that is dangerous, or maybe a little bit dangerous, is that developers who might make the next great app might become risk adverse. There's a lot of things in the App Store beyond censorship. The entire business model of the App Store that makes creating risky, innovative apps less likely or less financially rewarding on the App Store. And if enough of those people decide to make great apps on other platforms, and you start getting franchise-level killer apps that aren't on the iPhone, or at least aren't first on the iPhone, then it becomes an Apple problem. Or when the Wall Street Journal is writing about it, then it's an Apple problem. Until now, it's someone who liked the 500px app problem.
And you have to prove that the people that the folks that care about that freedom are willing to pay for those apps, which I think has not been proven yet.
Agreed.
I mean, that's a big problem for Android right now, is that there's just not enough pay. It doesn't – you talk to most developers, it just doesn't – it hasn't paid enough to recently. I mean, it's now picking up. It's definitely changing as this starts to build up. But that's the – you know, that's the challenge that they all have in the marketplaces.
We're going to take a break, come back with rumors. What is Apple's roadmap for 2013? Mac Rumors says they know. I trust Rene Ritchie. He's the rumor king. We'll find out.
They're quoting an analyst, so we can blame the
analyst. It's some dumb analyst. Oh, yes. I hate the analysts. It's not Gene Munster, is it?
No, it's actually one of the better analysts.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, it's worth hearing. Basically, till tomorrow, all we got is rumors anyway.
At least he's a better analyst because he's pulling it out of his ear instead of his butt.
Munster's at TV and remote control again. We know where Munster stands.
If you've got an iPhone and you want to get the newest, if you've got an iPad 3 and you want to get an iPad 4, if you have a, heaven forfend, an older BlackBerry RIM and you want to get a newer phone, I've got a place you can sell your stuff for a great price and do it easily and quickly. It's gazelle.com. Get your stuff moving here. Let's say you got a 4S, and you're saying, I would love to get this iPhone 5. Let's get an offer here. It's in good condition. $240. That's going to buy me the iPhone 5 right there.
That's awesome.
Isn't that a nice deal? If you've got a, you know, I know a lot of people, myself included, it wasn't until I started playing that Simpsons game that I realized the iPad 3 is a little slow for the Retina display.
Yes.
If you've got Homer, Marge, you know, Chief Wiggum, they're all wandering around at the same time. It's a little slow. So I'm thinking I'm going to take that iPad 3 third generation, AT&T, 64 gigabytes. Let's just check and see. It's in good shape. $365. Now I can buy an iPad 4 for practically nothing. This is the kind of great deal we're talking about. And what's good is these prices are good for 30 days. So if you think Apple's going to make an announcement next, you know, week, don't worry about it. Get the quote now. The price is not going up. It's going down on everything. So get the quote now, and you have 30 days to take advantage of it. Once you get all your stuff together, press the button. Gazelle sends you a shipping container and pays the postage on anything worth more than a buck. So it's postage free. You just throw it all in there, send it to Gazelle, and then they send you a check, or if you're in a hurry, a PayPal credit. You can even get an Amazon gift card with an additional 5% on top of it. I guess they're rebating the affiliate fee or something like that. But anyway, it's a great deal. Go for it. If you like Amazon, I buy everything on Amazon. That's the way to go. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Keep it moving. I have the stat here. Let me just check. They have sent so far $50 million to over 500,000 customers since they started. Gazelle. They, by the way, they wipe your data, too. They have data professionals. They wipe the data. You don't have to worry about that. Gazelle.com. You're going to love it. Give it a try today. So from the Apple 2013 product roadmap from Ming-Chi Kuo, who is an analyst at KGI Securities, and Mac Rumors agrees with you, Renee Ritchie, that Ming-Chi has a very good track record in predicting Apple's products. Here's what they say. This is the 2013 product and shipment roadmap. The first thing, an Apple TV refresh in the first quarter, like in the next month or so. Second quarter, a new MacBook Air. We're due, aren't we? Sure. Maybe a Retina display? What do you think?
That sounds great.
Ooh, I'd love that.
Not yet.
No? Because you need a high-end video graphics system.
Well, it's the same problem as the iPad mini, is that Retina demands more size, more battery, more LED, and fitting that into until you have breakthroughs in LED. A lot of the stuff that analysts predict is based on components and technology that are available. Like, Apple needs the next Qualcomm chip to do LTE, so you have a fairly good idea when they won't do it before and when they might do it.
Right.
And the same thing for the iPad mini Retina and the MacBook Air Retinas. They need a panel, LED, and a battery that will let them keep that form factor and power that display at the same time. And like you mentioned, Leo, the graphics chip as well.
And I have to say, I would pay the same amount of money for my Retina if it wasn't Retina. In fact, and I'd still buy it. And I'd buy
Wait a minute. What?
The Retina. I hate the Retina.
You don't like the Retina.
Ugh, the amount of processing power that we give up and the graphics errors and all the little weird tearing that I get.
Really?
Yeah, so if you open up Photoshop or OmniGraffle and you start playing on other things, you'll start seeing tearing. You'll see all kinds of other
stuff.
Can't
keep
up. And it's the weird thing, like you capture an image and suddenly it's a lot bigger than what you expected. And then this whole like when you hook another monitor outside of it and you now have to go to scaled and it's all – I really want my old
Gosh,
interface.
You were in love with the MacBook Pro Retina.
No, I love the laptop. Everything about it except for the screen.
Oh,
so
really?
The two Thunderbolts, the HDMI out. I wish I had
Do
one more USB 3.
Do you think they pushed Retina too soon since they're not going to be able to put it on
Absolutely.
Anything else? It's too early.
Absolutely.
Well, it's like the very first MacBook Air that wasn't a great machine and the real MacBook Air came later. This is like the first step towards this is the Apple or the Lisa of the Retina.
And I really wish they'd just
I'm feeling bad now. I love my Retina. Yeah.
If you're not pushing it really hard, I think it's fine. I think that the big issue is that if you really need performance out of that laptop, and that laptop is so powerful and it's got so many things going for it, I just wish they'd build a version that was non-Retina and a version that was Retina so that people actually needed performance out of it, that just didn't need pretty text but actually needed performance out of it could actually get it.
Well, Ming-Chi Kuo says there will be a new design Retina MacBook Pro in the third quarter. Right about the same time, Apple announces two new iPhones. They're thinking June or July for what we thought, an iPhone 5S and an iPhone 5 revamped.
Is this the math that they're talking about?
So here's what they're saying. The iPhone 5S will be an A7 system on a chip for better performance. It will have a fingerprint sensor, faster camera, f2.0 aperture, smarter LED flash. And then they will do an iPhone 5 repackaged into a slightly thicker plastic enclosure in 6 colors. Where do they get this must be from the suppliers, Renee, right? I mean, there's no reason you couldn't pull this out of your butt.
No, well, the less expensive iPhone is something that my understanding is Apple's been working on for years, and they've had prototypes for it, but they chose instead to lower the cost of other iPhones and make those available.
Right.
Apple works on tons of stuff in the labs, whether they ever go to market on it. And if there comes a point where they decide that a low-end, colorful iPhone will increase their addressable market and make them more money and will still be a great product, because they'll never do a netbook of iPhones, then they'll release it.
Somebody in the chat room, Empower Mac, is asking about an IGZO display, indium gallium zinc oxide.
That helps with new LEDs that help.
We've seen them in TVs. They look gorgeous on the show floor at CES. Supposedly, according to Digitimes, Apple has been in discussion with Sharp over these IGZO panels for 2013.
If they can get the yield rates and the pricing that they need.
How about you give us an Ethernet port? Stop improving.
Not gonna happen. Not gonna happen.
I have to admit that after putting down Andy's issues about the Ethernet port, probably the number one thing that I run into is showing up at a location, you know, to test a location or whatever.
Just plug it into the Thunderbolt.
I know. I just I don't have a little, you know, because it's not built in. You know, you get someone borrowed it. Next thing I know, I don't have one.
Well, and this is really true. You cannot go out into the world with a MacBook without the little package of connectors. There is about 8 of them. Yeah. You got to have that because, look, I have just the same bag.
Yeah.
I have exactly the same bag.
That's like how to glue everything into everything.
And now I also have lightnings in there of all kinds.
Yeah, no, I have these have lightning to HDMI and then a whole bunch of Thunderbolts and all, you know, to
we've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
The IGZO is a lower power. So, and it's a improved touch sensitivity and higher pixel density as well. And the glass edge is slimmer, so the devices can be smaller. All of these things are things you would like in your portable devices, iPhones and iPads. So that's let's hope that rumor is accurate. The iPad and the iPad Mini, Apple will update both lines during the third quarter. That's June, July, August.
Sure.
September. It's actually July, August, September. With the iPad Mini gaining a Retina display as the most notable change, he also predicts a full-size iPad will become considerably slimmer and lighter with those bezels that the Mini has.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the fingerprint scanner. I am. What I think, though, is I think what's more likely is, or what's more useful is facial recognition. They do a lot of work in that area. Me being able to just take my iPad and go like this and open up my
Android does that, but it's so bad. It doesn't. It sort of does it sometimes. Windows 8 does it.
You mean fingerprint or?
Well, I've had fingerprint on laptops, but Android has the face recognition and Juju Bean.
You're only one Leo mask away from getting all his stuff.
Yeah, it's just not. It's in fact, they don't even say it's secure.
Well, you know, it depends on what kind of camera they're using. I mean, there is a lot of technology out there that's not just using the geometry. It is actually using heat recognition. So it depends on what kind of camera they put into the front of that. As far as, I mean, you can. There's a lot of good technology in that area.
I think the bigger problem is that if you're not, there's not 100% of all situations are ones in which you can really conveniently go like this before you actually use
it. No, but I think having that as an option for me being able to hit something because it's just
Is that really the Apple way? I think the Apple way is to figure out what they think is the best way of doing something and make that as perfect as they can make it, mm-hmm. rather than saying, you want a fingerprint? We'll give you a fingerprint. You want a face recognition? We'll give you a face recognition.
Whether it's Android or iOS, I think biometric controls become very important as we move into digital IDs in the next decade, is that it's not just going to be a code. It has to be something that is, it may not be that something that you use just to open your phone.
Biometrics is good if it works, but these devices are so stupid.
Well, they have to. But this is the beginning. This is the beginning. Like, says, oh, it's not working
I'm about
yet.
To turn on. They have face unlock. They have face and voice unlock on Android. Yeah. Here's what it says: Look at your phone to unlock it. Keep these things in mind. Face unlock is less secure than a pattern, PIN, or password. Someone who looks similar to you could unlock your phone. The data used to identify your face is kept private. Shall we set it up? Find an indoor spot, not too bright, not too dim. Hold the phone at eye level. Do not use it while driving. Okay, starting up. Here's my face.
My voice is my passport. Authorize me.
Yes. It's very good reference.
Don't move.
Stephen Tobolowsky. Very good.
Wow. You read it too, huh? All right. Say the word or phrase you used to use as your wake-up command 4 times. Mac Break Weekly sucks. Mac Break Weekly sucks. Now I've got to say that 4 times. Mac Break Weekly sucks. Mac Break Weekly sucks.
I don't think it's going
to
work.
You're not allowed
to
laugh.
Well, I think we know what our show title is going to have to be. Yeah. Thank you very much, Neil LaPorte. But I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Alex. I mean, I think that another way that if you want to think about what you think Apple might be doing in the next 4 or 5 years, it always what part of this is broken, what part of this needs to be fixed. I think that verification is definitely one of those things.
Well, and I don't think that this is something
especially as devices get lost. So if there's a way to, for instance, put in like a fingerprint scanner literally on the edge of the device,
I'm sure
so
that
it
cannot
not only knows
the rumor.
Not only does it know the pattern that you grip it with, but can also get some information about your identity from that. That is something that I think Apple would do that would absolutely tell people to say, maybe I should make my next phone.
I think that if you're a government agency or you are a company that has some issue with security, this isn't just to open up your phone every single time. It's put a password in. give your voice, you know, recognition, put your thumbprint in and look at the phone. It's not that any one of those is accurate. It's that, and it's not the technology that would be used in this phone would be necessary right now. But imagine being able to vote, for instance, online because you were able to prove.
A long way to do that.
I bet you some states will start experimenting with that in the next 10 years.
And you know, Apple would build it right into Siri. So it'll say, Alex, I can't quite see you. Can you please turn the phone a bit to the left? Oh, thank you, Alex.
Why are you frowning, Alex? You're using an iPhone. You
Alex,
should be smiling.
Exactly. Why are you the naked? Real, you know we don't real. Allow naked logins.
I'm a your clothes on.
Remember that real iPhone users are smiling all the time.
Right.
Smile exactly. all the time when you're using the phone, Alex.
Please enter your childlike sense of wonder to continue.
Yeah. Apparently, the MIT Technology Review says that Apple does have a job listing for writers to enhance Siri's witty personality.
That's awesome.
And they bought that security company for who knows.
Yeah, they say they're
I think Apple should just hire half the staff from The Onion and then just
that would be
put them to work. That would be
They want someone. Yeah,
I saw that job listing. I was so close to just saying, I know you're going to say that I can't take this job for a lot of reasons, and you can't give me this job for a lot of reasons. But let's at least walk through this process to see if maybe there is a way that I can take this job. But you can.
It would be so
awesome
to have Andy write.
Andy,
Siri.
You're made
you would,
for this.
You so should do that. You should give up your high paying famous job, and at least moonlight for Apple writing for them. That would be awesome.
You are made for it. So
if it came out a year from now that, yes, I did lie to everybody and I have been writing for Siri for the past year, I think they would say, okay, Andy, that was naughty. You should have told us, but we totally understand.
I think we should create a petition. Yeah. I think we should create a petition for Apple that we should just tell them they should hire Andy even part-time to do this. You know, just Andy and Akko should be contributing.
Comic book reference, we'll know he did it.
Here's the listing. They're looking for someone who combines a love for language, wordplay, and conversation.
That's Andy.
With a demonstrated experience in bringing creative content to life within an intense technical environment.
That's Andy.
You'll need experience in writing character-driven dialogue.
Andy.
A good vocabulary and ideally knowledge of more than one language. What's your second language?
I make up words oftentimes.
Yeah. The goal of the hiring would be to, quote, evolve and enrich Siri. Apple is focused on keeping Siri's personality...
I just got the if there's the part of that for the resume, I'll have to make it like a dating video. Like, well, Siri, I see from your profile that you like good conversationalists, and I talk a lot for a living, and I read a lot of comics, movies. I have a lot of references, although I try not to be too annoying about making those pop culture references. I try to listen as much as I talk. I know that you tend to want to listen more than that, but I'll try not to be overbearing and. Anyway, so my ID is 441-4812.
You want to go for long romantic walks?
If you're like me,
I like to walk outdoors with my phone by parks and public spaces.
Want to feel alive again?
I like to look for restaurants. I like to ask about the weather all the time.
The interesting thing in this whole lineup of Apple's roadmap, again, admittedly, not from Apple, obviously. Nothing at all about a Mac Pro. He does expect a shift to the Haswell platform for the new iMac and the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air. That's the new Intel chip in the fourth quarter. But no Mac Pro. You know, I had a caller.
I don't think they're going to do it.
On the weekend, who is a film editor. And he's having huge problems with the log and store on the old Final Cuts. It's apparently broken the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't move to Final Cut Pro 10, the app store version, because it's missing things that he needs. And he, like a lot of pros, is becoming more and more frustrated with Apple's approach to the pro market.
Oh, I think they are. I mean, I think what's interesting about it is that Final Cut 10 was actually a boom for Apple, Adobe, and Avid.
Yeah, they all
did. There's very few things that you could do that everybody wins. And what happened was is that Apple, with Final Cut 10, they massively expanded their market. They made more money than they've made in a long time on Final Cut. And so it was a huge boom for them. It was also a boom for Adobe, who saw a lot of people going over to Premiere, and it was a huge boom for Avid, who saw mostly a lot of people coming back to Avid that had gone over to Final Cut. And so all of them made money out of the deal. It was quite a unique anomaly in a business decision that all the competitors actually benefited from Apple making that change. And so but I don't think Apple really is worried about the market to do high-end film or high-end commercials or a lot of those pieces is not nearly the size of the e-learning or corporate markets or, you know, other markets that are there. And so I think that Apple is right in going down the direction. It's very frustrating for a lot of people who depended on them in that area. But I don't think that they're going back. And I think that you just have to decide what part of the market you're in and make a decision about whether – I mean, I have – one of my companies works mostly on Premiere. We do some stuff with Avid, and then we do most of our stuff with Final Cut 10. So that's kind of our, you know, from Pixel Cores, we're using a little bit of all of that stuff. And so I don't, I don't think that it's, I don't think Apple's going to go back. I don't have any assumption that they're going to do that. I don't think we're going to see a Mac Pro. I think that.
Ever?
No, ever. I think it's more likely that Apple will stop. I think the real thing that Apple should be thinking about as opposed to a Mac Pro is. To deactivate looking for the chip on the Mac and just let OS X be like, you know, work on the Intel platform. You know, so for $30 you can put it on a PC. But I think as the market, as Apple's Mac market becomes less of their business, it becomes easier for them rather than continuing to build all those machines is simply, you know, kind of, you know, unleash their operating system on the other competitors, because there's a lot of people and a lot of companies that for $30 a head, without a whole lot of overhead would definitely change to a Mac, but want to use PC hardware. And there's a lot of pro users who would love to be able to have really big beefy systems with OS X on it, you know? And I think that is the, I think Apple is more likely to do that in my opinion. I know that it doesn't sound like they would do it, but they're more likely to do that than release a Mac Pro at this point, I think.
They could put a link to OpenBSD, I think, on their website would be about as far as that.
No, but I don't think it's, I don't think they want
OS. Darwin.
I don't think they want OS, you know, I think, and I'm not saying they should open source, I used to say this, I don't think they should open source OS X, but I think that making it all that's how people are doing, you know, crack it, is they just stop looking for the chip. And so if Apple just stopped doing that, that by itself, it doesn't mean that they're open sourcing it, doesn't mean that they're supporting the hardware. It just means that they are making it available to a lot of other people with hardware, because people who buy Macs, in my opinion, buy them for the hardware. The hardware that when I buy an iMac, a 27-inch iMac for the price, I feel like I'm getting the highest performance I'm going to get. In the package, the size, the quality, everything else, the look, everything that I'm getting there is I don't think I'm going to find a PC that's going to do the same thing. So I don't think Apple competes from a hardware perspective anymore on the hardware. It's a small part of their business. Sorry,
like they didn't allow video recording on the iPhone 3G because it was a few frames lower than what they would expect. And I think that if they released the operating system, I mean, there'd be no driver support. People would be having to write their own stuff.
It would
create in their minds an experience that they don't want associated with Apple.
Precisely.
Brand.
Yeah, but I think
they're not moving that way. They're moving the exact opposite.
But I guess what I would say is that they keep on making their hardware. They could literally just not look for that one chip and not promote it, not support it, not say that it's a good idea.
You know, I haven't seen a lot of prosecutions of Hackintosh.
Oh, they're not prosecuting Hackintosh.
Maybe
I'm saying
Hackintosh.
But I'm just saying
do one now.
Yeah, I just think that it would be. It would expand
Apple
if it wasn't
moving towards less control. It's pretty apparent.
Well, I just think I think OS X from their perspective is not part of their future. I don't mean to say it that way, but I mean I do mean to say it that way. I mean it is not. That's not the, you know, there some amalgamation of iOS and OS X is somewhere in the distant future, and I think that the current operating system at some point in time becomes something they can make it more available.
I think it's really interesting that maybe this is just the way the numbers happen to fall, but so if they continue with their one update a year release schedule, we'll be at 10.9 in 2013. Something about the psychology of large round numbers says that 11.0 might be someplace where they're targeting the big change. If they truly are committed to their historical problem of we're okay with inconveniencing a great number of people, like Final Cut 10 users, like Apple IIe users, like even Apple Mac like even exact Apple Maps users, even Mac users who wanted a $500 Macintosh, we're willing to go in our own direction and make something incompatible. You would think that I should tamp that down and say it's tempting to think that 11.0 is going to be something rather radical and rather exceptional.
Yeah.
A couple of quick stories before we wrap it up. The guy who... Go ahead.
Before we move on, I just wanted to mention, it's interesting because we don't have a clear sense of Apple's March event because it's usually iPads, and they just put out a new iPad mini, and Min-Chi has the Apple TV refresh in there, interesting because it's already 1080p. There's probably not going to be a 4K Apple TV. There's no sign that they've gotten any deals in place with Hollywood to offer more functionality on an Apple TV. So sitting there all by itself in that corner, it's either a press release or it's something more interesting that would warrant an event built around it.
I think the two things that Apple TV could do without creating a TV is, A, let the USB port that already exists in there take a webcam so that you could do FaceTime. And two is apps. Like actually let people write apps to the Apple TV. If it's not opening a whole app store that's the iOS app store, at least let people actually start creating apps rather than just be a consumer device. But that opens up the gaming platform and all kinds of other things.
That's an obvious thing to do, and neither Google nor Apple do that. And I'm starting to think that there's a reason.
It's like Siri in that they want a channel strategy. If you make a specific deal with a content partner and then you open up an SDK, anyone can make it, and that destroys any value that channel partnership has for you. So they're probably going to keep HBO app.
I think there's also a big concern about it being too geeky. So I think that is where you open it up, where suddenly people are using the TV for other things.
Smart TVs have apps.
And no one uses them.
But they put them in there. I mean, and that's an even more consumer-y product than Apple TV.
But Google TV. I'm a little geeky. I have apps on my – I don't even know how to get to them. Like, I just go to my Apple TV and then I go – I mean, if Apple started adding apps, if I could start buying iOS apps, I would use that a lot more than the goofy stuff that they put on my Panasonic.
Well, I agree. I've wanted apps since day one, but I –
I feel as though, like, while all these people are all these companies are behind locked doors arguing about what the future is going I think people are already moving forward. I mean, I just spent a lot upgrading my broadband here at the house involved a lot of looking into all the services that my provider offers and a lot of other offers, and which gives me sort of an opportunity to think of all the things that I have piped into my house and whether I really want them or not. And man, I probably was within 5 minutes of saying, you know what, why don't you just cancel my cable, cancel all the TV channels. Because so much of what I do really isn't linked towards an actual cable box, an actual broadcast. So it's possible they're trying to work towards locking down content that people don't care about anymore.
Right.
And they should just – I'm almost starting to think that the company that really integrates and gets what internet TV should be all about is a company where you turn it on and here are icons of all the different services you subscribe to or use. And it doesn't assume that you want to watch television. Maybe your point of entry is going to be Netflix or the HBO Go app or whatever. So I wish they'd stop arguing and just start come up with that first semi-awful thing. I mean, again, Apple, you've done it before. You've released maps that at least gets that product outfit out there and gets the discussion going next iteration out there.
And I think one of the big things going for us with Apple losing some of its market share and getting pressed a little bit harder by its competitors is that Apple might need to get more aggressive. You know, and actually do some stuff that's a little bit more out there. And right now, I think sometimes they're dragging their feet.
It's not just their competitors. It's their competitors who used to be their service provider and their manufacturer. So, right. I mean, it puts them in a very difficult position. But right now, I did cancel my cable, and I use the Canadian network apps, CTV Global, City TV apps. CTV app will AirPlay, but not over a regular AirPlay. You have to do AirPlay mirroring, and the City TV app won't do it because of contract deals. And it creates a very fragmented experience. And I think if we can get movement on those things and you kind of circumvent the whole problem about the box is that your content is just where you are and you put it where you want it to be.
The people who want the traditional channel lineup, this is another problem. They're starting to age out of the system. Mm-hmm. We get these people who are now who never really knew TV that way, who are now close to being that generation that is now getting their own apartments, getting their real jobs, getting the job market with real degrees, and then soon there'll be the people who are starting to buy the houses now.
My kids don't know. They don't know what's on where. They don't know when it happened. They don't connect to networks anymore. They just connect to the shows that they're watching.
It's funny. I'm old and I don't know what's where either.
I rarely know it either. I mean, it's so. I mean, I think that we're a little bit of a unique situation.
Yeah, we're the early adopters.
But I think that there is that generation under 25 that is just totally disconnected from that.
We're going to take a break. Come back with your picks of the week, gentlemen. Prepare your picks.
Woot.
Woot. But first, I want to show you this. My pick. It's, what is that? The little box, that little tiny box. It's got, I'll tell you, it's got a Ethernet port on one side. It's got a USB port, power supply. That is the Lantronix X-Print server. And that thing going to change your life. If you've ever tried to print from an iPhone or an iPad, you know that if you have one of those AirPrint devices in there, I think they're all from HP. I think that's the only ones that support AirPrint. I don't know what the latest is. But, you know, otherwise you have to get an app. You have to set it up. It's really complicated. Wouldn't it be nice if you could take a printer, even a USB printer that's not on the network, and print to it easily simply from an iPhone or an iPad?
Oh, that's awesome.
This is what this does. It could take any USB printer, make it a network printer, and it also auto-discovers all the network printers on the network, makes them available and easy to access from your iOS. It solves the frustration trying to print from an iPad or an iPhone. You go right from the native menu. You don't have to buy any apps or install any software. You don't even have to configure this thing. You just plug it in. It works with more than 4,000 top brand printers. You're printing within seconds. One X-Print server will support as many as 8 USB printers and many network printers, depending on the device you get, all over the network. It's a great way to share USB printers with other users on the network as well, not just iOS devices. So this is the home edition. It supports $99 and supports 8 printers and up to 2 network printers for any home. 8 USB printers, 2 network printers. I don't think you got more than that. But if you do, if you're an office or a bigger network, for $199, you can get the Office Edition, which has unlimited network printers, 8 USB printers, and includes some network admin features like Active Directory support. This is an amazing deal. If you compare it with anything else on the market, you will. And I keep getting emails and tweets from people who've used it and say, this was so easy. I love it. Visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information. When you use the offer code TWIT, you'll get free shipping on your order. The X-Print server from Lantronix, xprintserver.com/TWIT. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIT when you check out to save on shipping. This is such a cool device.
Fantastic.
You've used it?
Yeah. I have given it to people who are much less technically astute than me, and they have made it work, just very simply.
There's nothing to do. There's nothing to install, nothing. Yeah, somebody said, why don't they do a parallel port version?
Serial, baby.
There are still some people out there with parallel port printers.
Hello, Epson. How many stop bits do I need for the...
Remember that?
I can't find the dip switches on my inkjet printer.
I remember those days. Andy Anako, your pick of the week, my friend.
My pick of the week, especially since we've been talking about iPad Mini, is a product from a company that I've recommended in the past, different things. The RAM Mount X-Grip. Yes, it does look like an X-Wing fighter. Mini tablet holder. It's part of the RAM mount system. I love this mounting system for just about everything, because instead of selling you just like here is a plastic thing in a box for car mounting or window mounting or whatever mounting your phone, they'll sell you a package, or you can just buy the suction cuppy thing for putting it on the window, or just the army bit because you want maybe an arm that's longer than this, and then when you switch from one phone to another, you don't have to replace everything you have in your car. You just have to replace the thing that actually holds the thing. So this is their new X-Grip system that will hold pretty much any large tablet. Let me see if I can one-hand it. You just spread the arms like this, put it inside. I'm trying to one-hand this. There you go. And then, believe it or not, once you let go, it actually holds it really, really well. Thank God it didn't fall.
Look at that.
Never done that before.
Yeah.
And again, the cool thing about that is that when you're not using it for, if you were ever to switch to a different sort of thing, you can now use that for your Samsung Galaxy. I don't have my, there you go. Or if you, let's say that you took this with you because you're going on vacation and you're going to be in a rental car, and you just wanted that just for your in-car navigation. But hey, now you're on the plane and you want a stand for your Kindle. This will work with your Kindle. This will work with anything that's of a certain size. They make a flavor of this same thing that is phone sized. And so that will work with your Samsung phone, and then it will work with your iPhone 4, and you can just switch from one thing to another. But it's a clever design that works with just about anything. But the other selling point is that again, other than these really cheaply made plastic things that you get that will work with one model of phone, but then as soon as you upgrade a year later, you've got to buy an entirely other thing and replace everything. With this one, it's really made extremely well. They make mounting kits for like law enforcement, for military, for all kinds of things. Not only that, but again, you can just replace the parts that you need. I've got so many bits and bobs ever since I bought my first RAM mount thing 3 years ago that like whenever I'm shooting video inside the car, I take the head off of this, I put in a camera mount, and now it's a window camera mount. I've got different solutions for so many different things that it's just not funny. But this this part, the X mount part, is about $30. If you want to put together this entire thing, I think this would probably cost you about $40 or $50 because they will sell this as a package or as independent things. But again, can't recommend RAM mount highly enough. It's really price competitive with everything else, and it's built way better than anything else you're going to find on the market.
It's RAMMount.com, the X grip. And it's spring loaded, so it'll adjust.
Spring loaded again. You wouldn't think that it's actually going to hold on to this thing, but it really does grip it tightly. I took it. This is the first time that I actually like was driving around with like a mini tablet, a mini tablet like locked into my car car dashboard. And man, it is a trip. It is a scene, man, to have like this like floating inside like your peripheral vision, especially when you're watching Lord of the Rings while bobbing down I-95. Now that was adventurous.
Learning about football while driving.
Exactly, learning, making sure that I know all about the traffic type I'm about to create by crashing. But yeah, it's incredibly solid. This does not move at all. And when it comes time to leave your car, you just do this and it's out. That's it. You don't have to click it into anything. You don't have to trap anything else. The points are all coated in rubber, so you're not going to scratch your beautiful anodized aluminum finish. They really did this correctly.
It's got a better grip than Kelly Clarkson at the inauguration.
Oh, nice. Snack.
Did you see that?
Didn't see it. Didn't see
Chad,
it. Didn't
do you not see my screen? Are you busy? Sorry. There are a couple of things came out of the inauguration, and somebody had a caption contest, and my favorite was, "Hey, nice grip there, lady." There's another one, Michelle Obama and John Boehner. Did you see that one?
No.
Yes, the animated GIF.
It's an animated GIF. Viral. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what really happened, but it's a great animated GIF. Let me see if I can find one that's actually animated.
Did you see the photo of everyone texting? There's probably some down.
Oh
point.
Yeah, there's texts everywhere.
Well, no. There was one shot that someone shot down.
Got their phones
where
out.
Literally Michelle Obama, Barack Obama, their kids, everyone are all like at the inauguration. They're all like heads down in their respective mobile device.
Let's see. I think it's from Atlanta.
Well, it's a big deal. If I were being sworn in as the president, I'd probably be texting my friends to let them know how cool the day was.
Yeah, sure.
In case they hadn't heard. I probably would have told them before that. Okay, that's a good point.
You just, you know, there's nothing, you know, nothing private. There's nothing private.
It's a humble brag.
It's, yeah. Yeah, here you go. It's pretty funny. This is not as good. This is not as good as the one I've seen. Let me see if I can see it on Tumblr. We don't know what President Obama was saying to John Boehner, but it was clear that here we go. Here's the eye roll. Yeah. Wait a minute. No. In a minute. Hold it. Wait. Yeah. We don't really know what's going on, but
well, we can probably say it was Boehner.
The first eye roll.
She has a Twitter account now, right?
Austin Powers, because that's really played out. And that would get an eye roll. Oh, behave, Ms. First Lady.
Oh, behave. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is a Mac app. It's called Napkin, and it's for very quick annotation of images. It's put together by Chris Parrish, who used to be at Adobe and then was at Rogue Sheep, Thomas Unterberger, who did the visual design for Screens, which I really liked, and Guy English, who I have to disclose is a friend of mine, but I think this app is really good in spite of that. And he did video games, and he did Tapulous and a bunch of other stuff since then.
All right.
And they made, basically it's an app, you just drag images into it, you can quickly do callouts, quickly do arrows, quickly add shapes, and the goal was to make a Mac app that works almost like an iOS app. There's almost no intermediation. You just quickly gesture on a shape and it's there. You gesture out an arrow and it's there. You drop a call out. It is incredibly fast. We have switched to doing all our how-tos on iMore using Napkin. Now, it's close to a $40 app, but at a certain point, your time is worth way more than your money. And this is so fast at getting the kind of stuff done that we do. Also, developers are using it to submit bugs or to mock up design charts. It's one of the best Mac apps I've used in a long time, just the way it's coded, the way it works, and the work that it lets me do with it. So if you work in development, if you work in design, if you work in any sort of technical documentation and just want to get stuff done quickly, you can even, once you've done a drawing there, you just drag the little icon in the top right and you can drag it right into Photoshop, right into a file, right into an email, and it packages the image for you. It's non-destructive. You can do all sorts of really cool things. And if you just draw a circle, Leo, with your mouse, you'll see it'll automatically, it's very good at knowing what you want to do and just figuring it out. Once you put an arrow, you move stuff, the arrow follows with you.
And how would you compare this to like Sketch?
It is what Sketch should have been. It's a 1.0 product though. So, I mean, it's not feature complete yet. They're still working on it. They're doing a lot of things. But what it does, basically, it does right. And for example, you draw a circle, you decide you want a rectangle or a round rect instead. You don't have to delete anything because programmatically, they're the same. You just change the border attribute; it becomes a square, a rectangle, a round.
Some sort of vector drawing. And what is the format of that? They're sharing it out in. I mean,
you can save it as an actual Napkin file, but if you drag it out, it's just a PNG file. It's a PNG. You can do with.
It's animated
It's not animated. It's 2D now. It's really for marking up. It's for something you might have drawn out brought out Adobe. The PDF version of Adobe and Acrobat at one point to do.
Right.
And you no longer need something that heavy. And it's super lightweight, super fast. And again, if you get sent a drawing, you're like, no, I don't want this area. I want that area or I want this color. You can call that out really quickly, get it in, get it out, and you're back at work. And
it's in the App Store. It's called Napkin.
Yes.
And in the desktop App Store, it's a Mac app.
It looks like it's made for the iPad, so I'm really hoping they get around to an iPad version.
So cool to have this for the iPad.
They started it before the iPad was actually announced, and the idea was, why can't we have big screen apps that work the way iPhone apps did? And then, after they were developing it, Apple announced an iPad. So it's easy to see that translation.
Yeah. Well, I just bought it.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna get it. I right now I use Sketch all the time.
Yeah,
Sketch
is similar.
It's similar. I think this one looks like it has more features.
The nice thing about Sketch is it saves it automatically to Evernote now because Evernote.
And this you just which I never use, but I just don't have to pick a text tool. Yeah. It just works.
Right.
This is cool. It's a little bit like OmniGraffle, a little bit too.
A little bit of everything.
It's a tool that they made for a job that they're doing, and they use it all the time. And that's usually the best.
Yeah,
best sign
of
a good app.
Yeah.
So it's like their version of Keynote. Where the stuff that they had to make sure the boss was using every single day. Oh man, does that make sure it gets done well very, very quickly?
And the Apple developer community is very small and they tend to know each other. So if there's anything wrong with the developer tool, you hear about it very quickly.
And finally, Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week, my friend.
So I have one pick from myself and then one from my wife, actually.
So the
one that I'm going to pick is a lot of people are. Take a lot more photos with their iPhone. And if you're looking for kind of a really quick guide to shooting with your iPhone using the different hardware and software, actually a PixelCorps member put together a book it's an iBook, and it's called How to Create Amazing iPhone Photographs. And it's $3. I really want to see, part of it is it's a great book. I mean, he just really kind of geeks out. So this is Michael Sweeney, and he kind of geeks out on different pieces of hardware. And of course, all of that's changing constantly. But he kind of gives you some ideas about how to how to shoot. I mean, he's got the cover is this moonshot that I still can't believe was shot with an iPhone. So, but all the photographs, of course, are shot with an iPhone. And he talks about different hardware appliances and software appliances. And again, for $3, if you're just trying to get ahead and see all the things that you can do, this is an easy buy. So, it's great little and what I'm hoping for, I guess, is I want to see more books like this. In fact, I'm thinking of creating a couple books like this where they're really quick. They're easy. It's 100 pages. It's right. In an iBook format. And you can, for $3. I mean, I think that is the future for a lot of book selling. And I definitely, I think people, and there's some, you know, there's video, there's some interactive materials, there's all kinds of little bits and pieces in there. So definitely check it out. As I said, it's a cost of a coffee to learn more about how to take good pictures with your iPhone. And a lot of us, of course, if you're listening to the show, probably want to know more about that. So How to Create Amazing iPhone Photographs by Michael Sweeney. And then my wife's pick, my wife doesn't get very many apps. So when she gets an app that says she really and she says she really likes it, I think there's some of our audience that would like to know. So my wife loves, it's called Grocery IQ. Have you guys?
Oh, yeah. I've used that for years. Yeah, so, it's cross-platform too, which is great. So you can keep your grocery lists on any device,
right.
Computer, tablet, phone.
Exactly. And my wife, she was syncs just up. Really trying to figure out what she can use on her iPhone that would let her, you know, while she's thinking about it, write something down, and then also very quickly and easily be able to, you know, when she's at the grocery store. The big problem with a lot of the lists is A, they were too hard to create, or B, they just didn't, they weren't really good at feedback, like while you're at the store clicking on them.
Yeah.
And it didn't break them into the sections. So what's really nice also is this breaks it into sections. So when you put something in, it categorizes all the dairy products with the dairy products and all the other pieces so that, you know, when you're in that section.
And you can even tell it the layout of the store so right. that it knows, oh, you're at Petaluma Market. Well, here's what's in these aisles.
Yeah, really great. Really, really great. Anyway, so it's called Grocery IQ, and it's approved by my wife, which is very important.
I wish it had Siri integration because, you know, I still now make my lists because of Siri and reminders.
Right.
Because I could just talk to it. And if that had Siri integration, that would be awesome.
Perfect.
Apple, you got to open this API or something.
Yes.
Let developers use it.
Yes.
I have a couple of picks, but I'll tell you, I'll give you my my pick, and I can't really show it to you, but it is the new iMac. I've had it now for a week. Very fast. I got the Fusion Drive.
Is this the 27?
Yeah, 27 skinny. So it's only skinny if you look at it right at the right angle. But, as soon as you turn it, you see the bulge.
But it still is like an optical illusion. No matter you get pretty far around before you go, wow, it's not skinny.
Also much lighter. We noticed immediately. It's much lighter. It really does feel like a whole different thing. And it is super fast, noticeably faster even than the last year iMac that I had. I had a late model iMac. And here it comes. It's so light that John just brought it right over. The terabyte drive in it.
IMAX to it.
Bring me the iMac. So you see how thin it is. It's one of those things just like the MacBook Air where you've got a thin bezel and then it bulges in the middle. The bulge is still not as thick as the older iMac.
Yeah.
And it's appreciably thinner. And it makes the screen look really good because the screen just seems to be this little piece of glass floating in place. Also, that Fusion drive, you know, that's the drive where it's two drives, a SSD.
Right.
I think 160 gig SSD and then a spinning 3 terabyte drive. Noticeably fast. I actually have done some benchmark tests on it. And of course, it's hard to benchmark test because it gets faster. So it's a little deceptive. What happens is watches what you're doing and puts the drives you access most often. The files you access most often on the solid state drive. It's constantly changing. So I do have a benchmark that I did with the Blackmagic speed test. And what I'll do is I'll compare this. This is the Otherworld Computing Mercury SSD that I have on the right that I have in my MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
In the Retina. So 504 megabytes a second, megabytes, not bits, second read, 308 megabytes a second write. That's a fast SSD. But if you go over and you look at, now this is the Fusion, 3 terabytes. It's very close, 286 4 megabytes per second.
And here's my question: is how long will it do that? If it's a really big file, will it run out?
These are 5 gig files.
Okay,
I'm using the 5 gig on the Blackmagic speed test. And furthermore, it got better as I kept reading and writing that file. Of course, it sped up because it moved it to the SSD.
Right.
So this is without reading and writing it for too long, and it got even faster. But 383 megabytes a second read compared to 504, so it's about 20% less, and 286 megabytes per second write compared to 308, still much faster than a traditional spinning drive. Really recommend it. I have to say this new iMac is great.
It's looking at these new iMacs that has me not think that we're not going to get another Mac Pro because, well, once you start accessorizing with Thunderbolt, and adding a lot of the things that you would normally have with a Mac Pro, I think that you end up solving 90% of the problems that people have. Now, some people are saying in the chat room that Boot Camp is not working on the Fusion drives. Do you know anything about that?
Windows does not understand a Fusion drive.
Right. It's confused.
And so this is in certainly the optimizations are built into OS X.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't tried putting Boot Camp on there. Will Boot Camp not work? I think from in point of view of the hardware, it would still look like a single drive.
Right.
Unless I'm completely mistaken.
That's what people were saying in the chat room. I haven't tried
it. I haven't tried it.
I think it's...
I'm not rushing to install Windows 8 on this, to be honest. To be perfectly frank. But I guess I should try it.
Touchscreen is worthless, Leo.
Yeah, that's right. You need a touchscreen. So Apple highlighted the issue on both its iMac configuration and Fusion Drive explanation page. Boot Camp Assistant is not supported at this time on 3 terabyte configurations at this time.
Right.
So you do have to use Parallels or a VMware Fusion or OneBox to run Windows on it. That's not the end of the world. As far as I'm concerned.
No, it's great. And we got the 21-inch for my parents-in-law and they for Christmas. And they
now, that doesn't have the Fusion, I don't think.
No.
So I don't think you have to worry about that.
No, it's great.
That's interesting. That I didn't realize you can't use Boot Camp on it.
It's for whatever percentage, needs
and
to...
And yet. We'll get that one guy back to Boot Camp soon.
Well, if you really need to run Windows in native mode on one of the new iMac, don't get the Fusion drive.
Right. Right, absolutely. If that's really where the direction you're going.
But if you're running it as a native Mac, it's fast.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It is fast.
Yeah.
And to get 3 terabytes at that kind of speed is really great.
Yeah, no, I have a desktop still sitting in my house, and I'm finally looking at it going, I don't really want to pay for that heating bill. It is the heater, actually, for the room is my Mac, and so I'm thinking of getting it out of the office.
I've been holding out for the new Mac Pro, but when you parse Tim Cook's words carefully, he says that I'll have something for pro users, not necessarily.
Oh, he doesn't say I'll have a new Mac Pro in 2013.
No, he says something for pro waiting users. For a new Mac Pro, it's something like we'll have something for you next year.
Oh.
It's not as specific. As,
yeah. So now I'll give you a sneak preview right here. It's one of these five.
And someone was asking in the chat room, about Mac Minis versus whether you need a Mac Mini or an iMac. And I think that for most people, I would say an iMac is a better solution just because it's all in one. You don't have to think about it. The advantage of the Mac, we have a lot of both. Mac Minis are great because you separate the Mac Mini from the monitor. So you can have a whole bunch of Mac Minis stacked up somewhere and a whole bunch of monitors somewhere else. I mean, that's really the time we get it. But otherwise,
it's very
specialized. It's a server more so, or being able to have, again, have them all in one place and have my monitors in another. But I think that for the most part, I think that the 27 and 21 are the best computers that Apple has made. Desktop computers.
And they're selling really well, apparently.
Yeah. Evidently, it's hard to get them.
What, really?
Yeah, the 21-inch now is now up to 2 or 3 weeks rather than 7 or 10 days.
Oh,
yeah.
I feel lucky.
So it's slowing down again.
I ordered this a couple of months ago, but I'm happy I did.
Yeah, I wish I had.
It's replaced the other Mac. What
I'm
happened
jealous.
To the old Mac? It's now a Skype machine, I think.
it's absorbed.
Sad. It's absorbed into the Borg.
It's the doorman.
Renee Ritchie is at imore.com, a great website you must visit, imore.com. He joins us every week from Montreal. Hope you're staying warm this winter, Renee.
It's been up and down, Leo. It gets warm long enough to entice us out of our homes and then freezes us solid again.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
and thanks to Alex Lindsay. Appreciate your time.
It's good to be here.
Good to see you.
As a quick reminder, number one is I've been posting a bunch of stuff about Mac on my G+ page. So if you search G+, you'll find me there. And then also we have a G+ community for Mac Break.
Yes.
So just for Mac Break Weekly.
You're really, really running that. So I think
I've kind of put it together. And so there's 800 or 900 people already in the community, but we'd love to have you. So if you're listening to the show, go to the G+ communities and search for Mac Break Weekly, and it's I added a whole bunch of little bits and pieces. And we had this great thing where we asked people to start. I shared my my home screen from my iPhone. And
well,
suddenly
that's a
there
great
was
idea.
A, yeah. Suddenly there's a whole slew of them. All
I love
of people,
that.
Of people What's, sharing them. And I just think it's very interesting.
How do you organize
so,
that?
So I have to admit that I'm playing a little bit in the, you know, social experiment of what can we do with that community. So we're just getting started. And we hope that more people jump into the G Plus community.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not are more just people, great. To be honest.
Well, we haven't talked about it at all. I think this is the first time we've talked about it on the show. So
all Mac, all the time. Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay is a moderator. I think I am as well.
Yeah, you are.
I will start spending more time in there. Actually, we wanted to think. We were thinking about. You were thinking about maybe using this for stories.
One of the things I was thinking is in the news. You know, you could give us a hand by posting some of the stories.
What should that we be talking about next week?
Yeah, right. So put it in the news. Maybe, and I'm going to try to start putting more stuff in the news as well, so that you kind of see the things that we're thinking about as far as news for the next
Maybe
week.
We'll do that on Mondays, Chad, is put our rundown, our preliminary rundown on Monday into
People Talk
Plus
about
and let and get your input. Right. We could do that.
Yeah, I finished the doc on Monday night, so I could do that.
And then one of the things I'm looking at doing is also like tips and tricks and so on and so forth that we might incorporate into the show at some point in time and talk about, you know, some of the things, the apps that we should be thinking about when we're trying to think about what these you can give us guides on things that we might want to recommend. So it's a great way for you to kind of have a two-way communication. There's a lot of people that are, it's a pretty active group.
It is. It's great.
Yeah. So it's, I think that these communities are going to build up.
To me, this revitalized my interest in Google Plus. I think the communities are a great feature. And I got to point out that MacBreak Weekly, what did you say, 900 members in it?
I think 870.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
But this week in Google has more than 3,000, so we got to get to work.
Yes.
Get more people
in
there.
So join. Have your friends join. It's not that we're competitive or anything, but...
Participate.
When can we
and
get
deliver it did start working, Leo. Started working right after the show last week for Google Plus.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alex, for being here. Will we see you next week?
Yes.
Great. Mr. Andy Iannacco, Chicago Sun-Times... Last day as an 8-bit character.
or at least the last day that we can not blame Skype or some other provider. next week, if there are problems, I can once again start cursing at Skype.
Just an update for those of you watching live. There was a lot of chatter during the show. Sarah Lane was in a car accident. She was in Doyle Drive heading.
Yikes.
Was she here for TNT?
She was.
She was.
So she was heading home. She said in her Twitter, there were huge buckets of water gushing from the ceiling. She jammed on her brakes and was rear-ended and slammed into the wall. Her car was totaled. She's on her way to the emergency room, but she's tweeting, so we know she's conscious. I think she's conscious, unless she's unconsciously tweeting.
Right.
No, it's a new feature.
But I sent her a note saying, you don't have to answer this, but let us know if you need anything, and we will certainly keep you up to date. And I know there's so many people who adore Sarah, including myself, so we will absolutely keep an eye on Sarah and let you know how she's doing. She's well enough to tweet anyway. Usually, if it's a life-threatening injury, people don't Twitter about it. But I might be wrong.
I think we're moving into a new age.
When I have my heart attack, I'm going to tweet it.
Yes.
Can't move my left
arm. It's a good way to stay ahead of the story.
Breaking news. Chad Johnson.
Oh, and I wanted to mention that we have a new YouTube channel.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah.
You can head on over to youtube.com/MacBreak, and this is where our new episodes will be uploaded. So if it used to upload to the youtube.com/Twit channel that is being repurposed. So if you would like to, go on over to youtube.com/MacBreak Weekly and subscribe to that channel, and you'll only get MacBreak Weekly videos.
Not, by the way, MacBreak, but MacBreak Weekly. Very important. There is no MacBreak. You should run out and get it. You can still go to youtube.com/twit and find our promos, specials, things like that. And what you'll also find on the right-hand side of the screen is a list of each show's direct YouTube link. That way, if you can't remember it, and sometimes it's not obvious, you'll be able to see the YouTube channel. We did this because... This way you can subscribe more granularly to the shows that you want to get notifications about. But we are going to work on returning a all-in-one feed. We had one on our website, which was accidentally disabled. We're going to put that back. We may already have it back.
It's, yeah. It happened within hours of us talking about it last
time. Okay. And then we're also working on a unified YouTube feed for the crazy ones. Here's to the crazy ones who want every single show. So if I go to twit.tv/feeds/node/feed, I will now once again get a all shows feed. Good. Thank you for getting that back. We wouldn't want to lose that. Yep. Launch my Google Reader. That's good. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do the show 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday on twit.tv. That's 1900 UTC if you want to watch live. We'd love it because you can see we interact with the chat room whether we want to or not.
They interact with us.
But we also have on-demand versions available after the fact, both audio and video, at twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. And, of course, wherever you get iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, iTunes and Zune and all of those other places. I throw in Zune, just throw him a bone. Throw me a frickin' bone. It's actually cheaper to throw him a Zune.
Palm pre-users?
Yes, go ahead. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.